the man that we look forward to visiting with each and every month here on Main Street. Dr. Jack Russell Weinstein joins me with the segment we call Philosophical Currents, where we explore the deeper questions that shape our world. Jack's a Chester Fritz Distinguished Professor of Philosophy and Ethics at the University of North Dakota. Jack, welcome back to Main Street.
Oh, I'm always happy to be here. It's great to talk to you.
You are at work. I am at work. And that's what we're going to talk about today. The value of labor, what it means to earn a living, and what is the nature of work, Jack? And as we begin our conversation, it strikes me that North Dakota has a strong tradition of agriculture, energy, manufacturing jobs. Do these industries shape our region's perspective of the meaning of work?
Oh, I think they absolutely do. You know, there's a world of difference between a job and a career, and there's a world of difference between a career and a lifestyle. And if you are an agricultural worker, if you're on the family farm, if you're in a small town where everyone works in the same plant, it's going to have a very different effect than if you're in a city and everyone works retail and everyone has a different job. Plus, the idea of work that doesn't have a regular 9-to-5 schedule, that you have to wake up early, that you give part of yourself to. This is a region in which people very much identify as what they do, because what they do is often been in the family for generations or makes them part of the community in a very special way.
Many of our listeners also work in family own small business. And I guess I'm wondering, the basic question that I want to get to today, is work essential for us as humans? Is it part of human dignity, or can meaning be found outside of traditional labor as we live our lives each and every day? Do I work to live, or do I live to work?
Well, all human beings need something to do. And that something can be work or care for the family or a wide variety of hobbies or things like that. We need a task, and we need a task to help us find meaning. It is very American to identify yourself as an employee of a particular place. If you go abroad and you ask people what they do, they will tell you their hobbies. They will talk about their family. It's really a very American trait to say, what do you do? Oh, I work in an office, or I'm an office manager, or I'm a farmer, or something like that. And so it is the capitalism that we're all raised in that connects our identity with work in a very special way. But that doesn't change the fact that all human beings need something to occupy themselves with and need something external to provide some sort of meaning in their lives. Day-to-day life is overwhelming. It's repetitious. There are, you know, we all have that experience of being on vacation or something where we don't know what day it is. And that can be oppressive in its own way. And so human beings throughout history have sought endeavors to find a way to value themselves, to compare themselves with others, and to impart meaning in their daily activities.
I am thinking about retirement. It's that part of my life where that has come into my conversation with family and with friends. And I wonder about all of this. I hear stories about people who retired that love their retirement. I hear stories of people who retired and literally passed away because they had nothing to do, or at least that was the thinking. My life, I think, will change if I'm not working, if I don't have something to do where people need to depend on me to get a job done. I'm worried about that.
I've had a lot of conversations with a lot of folks who've retired, and there is a real difference in those who have a plan and those who do not. And those who do not often get depressed, they feel overwhelmed, they feel meaningless, and they end up spending a lot of time in front of the television. And I don't know, I want to say definitively die quicker, but it often seems that way. The people who have a plan, whether it's they want to work on their garden, or they want to do art, or they want to get a part-time job, or they want to travel the world or something like that, if they can afford it, that makes a huge difference. So I do think that there is a shock to the system when you retire, and the idea of doing nothing may be appealing for 3 months or 6 months. But after that, again, the day-to-day monotony of life becomes horrible. And all you're doing is putting out fires. You're having to deal with the broken toilet. You're having to deal with shopping. You're having to deal with cleaning all the time. And so I think the question that you have to ask yourself, and the question of all potential retirees have to ask, is what kind of thing do they think they will enjoy that will occupy their mind and their body, their spirit, their soul? What can they do to put love into, or get affirmation back, or get out of the house? And we spend 65, I guess, you know, we'll spend 50 years working, 50, 55 years working if we retire at about 65. And suddenly not working, how do you measure yourself? How do you value yourself? A lot of people go back to school. We have seniors at UND, and I mean, I mean senior citizens, not undergraduates. And they love being back in school, and they love talking to the young people and learning new perspectives. I run the senior citizens discussion group every month at the East Grand Forks Library, and there are people there who are in five or six clubs. They're in gaming club, and there's one woman who's in a Shakespeare club and who also reads all the president's letters and stuff, as well as being in the philosophy discussion group that I run. And that's where she finds her meaning. She is more social now in her retirement. She's in her 80s. She's more social now than she ever was during the rest of her life. And this is the kind of thing that you need to make a plan for, because isolating yourself or vegetating takes away part of the essential aspect of what it means to be a human, which is to produce things, to contribute to the society, to have relations with other people. We are relational beings. We need interactions with other people. And when we lose that interaction, we often lose part of ourselves.
Didn't mean for this to drift into a discussion about retirement, but I think it really fits. And I'm going to extend that a little more, Jack, if we could. Just got back from Florida, Jack. Visited my brother, who lives in a place called The Villages. And if you Google it and ask the question, what's there to do in The Villages? The answer will be everything, all the time. 365 days a year from sunup to sundown, there are groups that talk about everything. There are activities like sports. You want to play stickball in an organized stickball group? Jack, you can do that in The Villages. You can play soccer. You can play softball. You can do all of those things. You can play. But for me, what I've wondered about, okay, is it going to be fun to play every day all the time? Is that going to be fulfilling enough for me when right now I get to visit with people like you and many other people across North Dakota about very significant topics? Is it going to be fulfilling for me? And again, will I need to work?
I don't think this is a question that you can ask universally. I don't think what's true of Craig is necessarily true of Jack or true of your brother or sister or what have you. My grandparents lived in The Villages in New Jersey, and my grandmother wrote for The Villages newsletter, and she loved that. And one of the reasons why she loved that was everyone knew her name and everyone read the column. And so she'd walk down the paths, because they have paths, not streets, right? And they walked down the paths and people said hello to her. And that was very important to her, because she was a teacher for about a year, but then she got married and became a homemaker. And she literally shared a bed with her sister every day until the day she got married, when she shared a bed with her husband. And she was about 90 when she passed away. And for someone like her, I don't necessarily think that having that diversity of experience is necessary for her health and wellness. What she wanted was a community. What she wanted was affirmation. What she wanted was a task that she could focus on to engage her mind. But someone like you, who has had this diverse experience, who's talked to people all over the world, who every day is on the radio and exploring new topics and challenging your mind and translating the experience to listeners, you're going to have different needs. And so what a philosopher wants to do is say something universal, like, all human beings need to seek meaning, or all human beings need to find activities that give them a purpose. And then it becomes an individual question about personality and about character. And that's why it's so important to know yourself. It's so important to have gone through the process of questioning who you are, questioning your own values, and really asking yourself, what makes me happy? What makes me feel good? What helps me get up in the morning? Because as we all know, when you have nothing to do, that getting out of bed process can be very, very difficult if you have nothing to look forward to. And for some people, that may just be gardening for an hour a day. But for other people, that may be 8 hours in an art studio, or volunteering with other folks who need help, or going back and being a teacher and teaching students your career or things like that. It varies from person to person. And so I think for the 5 or 10 years preceding retirement, what people really have to do is go through the experience of self-exploration, try things as much as they can, experiment, talk to their friends, talk to their spouses, talk to their doctors, and figure out who they are to get a sense of what kind of plan they want to put in place.
All right. I'm going to bend this back to folks like us who are really still working and want to continue working and not worry about retirement, even though you're exactly right. It's something that we should think about. And I really like your advice to try new things, even though we're older. It's okay to do that. But Jack, I wondered this. I wonder about automation and artificial intelligence and all of those things impacting industries like farming and manufacturing. I've watched it on the dairy farms in Wisconsin that my son serves in his job. What should we be concerned about as some of these traditional jobs disappear, yet we want to still have value for someone? How can we get through these trends, these changes, these updates, I guess, to how things are done?
I saw this meme on the internet or I think it was a tweet or something, I don't know, where somebody said, I want AI to do my job so that I can create art, as opposed to AI creating art so I can do my job. And I think that that's a really wonderful summary of where we are right now and what we ought to do to direct these new technologies. If what we're doing is using AI to take away our hobbies and our fun and our creativity, then all we have is work. But if what we have AIs that make our jobs easier and more efficient, then it opens the door for us to explore all the other avenues of the human experience. You know, combines can be operated by GPS now, and you can sit in your combine and look at your phone while the combine is steering. And for some people, that's okay. For some people, that's not. What you consider a hard day's work and a valuable day's work varies from person to person. But technology has always changed the nature of work and has always changed the nature of our day-to-day life. And human beings have always adjusted. 100 years ago, they were predicting that we would have 20-hour work weeks. 100 years ago, they were suggesting that in the future, human beings would have all this opportunity to explore the more creative side of life. And that hasn't happened, right? You know, in your lifetime, in our lifetime, I guess it was the 80s and 90s, they were talking about the paperless office, right? That the computers would, you'd write emails and you'd do all your reports and everything would be on the computer. But of course, there are no paperless offices, right? There's paper all over the place. And so I think that technology is going to change the way we do our work, but it's not going to take work away. It will, however, force us to find new ways to work with that technology. And maybe in 20 years, we're not going to see baristas at Starbucks anymore. Maybe 20 years, we're not going to have people help us at Target. But there will be things for people to do. If there aren't, then governments are going to have to find other ways to help people make a living. And they might even have to be concerned with things like universal basic income.
Did I hear you say Andrew Yang? Did I hear the presidential candidate who proposed exactly that, this concept of universal basic income? I think his idea was to give everybody $1,000 a month. And his idea was to help allow that to help people who begin to be displaced by these things.
Not quite 100 years ago, William James, a philosopher, wrote one of my favorite essays called The Moral Equivalent of War. And what he was doing was trying to create a way to inculcate the virtues into young people, courage, strength, intelligence, without having them to go kill one another on the battlefield. And he prescribed a national work corps where for a year all young people would go and build bridges and repair roads and tend to forests and work in communities and do things like that to contribute to the society. And I think that something like universal basic income or the efficiency that comes with technology can make room for something like that, for ways in which we can contribute to other communities, to the common good, to those in need. There are always going to be people in need. There are always going to be people who require tending to, whether medically or interpersonally. There's always going to be need for infrastructure. There's always going to be need to tend to forests. There's always going to be need to help fight against nature when it fights against us, right? We're always going to have wildfires more at than we have now. And so how do we create a society where people are able to say, I want to contribute to the world, as opposed to just go into an office every day, push paper and get a paycheck and only cater to my family? For some people, that's fine. And for some people, that's enough. And there are lots of people who have jobs that don't give them meaning. What they're doing is they're working so they can come back to their family. What they're doing is they're working so they can, coach Little League or something like that. And that's fine. You don't have to find meaning in your work. You just have to find meaning in your life. And with technology and with efficiency and with assistance from government planning, we can open up the possibilities in ways that we've never been able to realize before.
Where I wonder whether this might begin to become important is how when younger people begin to contribute to the workforce in ways that are very different than the way you and I matriculated through the workforce. Is that something that you see becoming more important for younger people as they become contributors to society and maybe think of what work is in a different way?
I think that's right. And I think that what we mean by contributing to society really has to be on the table, because art is incredibly important to us. Everyone who listens to this broadcast has decided what color their walls should be. There's that process, has decided to put a picture or a painting or a photograph on their walls. Everyone who listens to this broadcast decides what they were going to wear today, whether it's a suit or a sweatshirt with your favorite sports team. We constantly make artistic decisions about our lives, but we dismiss those as unimportant. We dismiss those as secondary to other kinds of productivity. We need people to make the world full and vibrant and whole and, again, meaningful. I keep using that word. And so certainly you can take the position that you have to do a solid day's work to contribute to society, but that work doesn't have to be harvesting sugar beets. That work doesn't have to be being in a coal mine. That work can be making the world a better place for other people. And there's another risk that I call it the I've got mine, Jack fallacy. and what it is that sense that a lot of older people have, which is it was good enough for me, therefore it's good enough for them. I worked on the farm for 40 years, so I'm only going to give credit to people who worked that hard for their 40 years. I knew an administrator years ago who had a baby, and she used to say she didn't take maternity leave, so she doesn't understand why any of the other faculty want to take maternity leave. That's a horrible way of looking at the world, to think that your experience defines everyone else's experience. And so I think it it behooves our generation in this major, in this period of major technological change, to say, my experience isn't going to define the experience of the younger generations. What I have to do is listen instead of talk. What I have to do is negotiate and investigate and engage with the younger people to see what's meaningful to them, to see how I can influence the world in a positive way and not force my own unbending values on people who have a fundamental different experience. I mean, my daughter, I often talk about how during the pandemic, my daughter was incredibly social because all of her friends were online and she was always talking to someone. When she was doing her homework, FaceTime was in the background while all of her friends were doing her homework. If the pandemic had occurred when I was growing up as a kid, I would have gone crazy. I wouldn't have been able to talk to anyone or see anyone, and she was incredibly social. And that in itself is a profoundly different experience of what it means to grow up and what it means to have human relationships. And so the folks who say my mode of life is the only acceptable way of life, they're really hurting the next generation, and they're hurting themselves because they're closing themselves off to all of these interesting and exciting people who have new things to say.
We'll wrap things up here by sharing this with you, Jack. So I'm a computer software programmer. That's my degree is in computer science. I love fiddling around with computers, et cetera, et cetera. And I write code from time to time, and I like to write it on my little Raspberry Pi computer. If people don't know what that is, it's like a $50 thing that's about the size of a deck of cards that can literally do almost everything that a desktop can do for most people. I can program in it. And so I find myself spending hours and hours working through somewhat complex problems. And now what I do when I finish is I tell ChatGPT to write it in seconds. A, it's better than what I did. And B, their stuff works and mine's always, but I enjoy fighting through the process of doing it myself, staying in my old ways. And my kids say, well, don't bother with that. Go do something else. And it's just like, no, I enjoy this. This is what I like to do, even though there is a better way to do it. I like the work.
Everyone gets to decide for themselves what's meaningful. And what's important is that you put in an effort and you engage your mind and you engage your personality. And so for you, that coding is painting a picture or having a stamp collection or tending to a garden or baking a cake for your household or doing any other things. It isn't important what you do. It's important that you do something. I hope you're not harming the world. I hope you're contributing to other people's wellness as well as your own, and you're being healthy and self-reflective and all of these sorts of things that are also essential to human flourishing. But what makes the human experience is that we get to choose. We get to choose for ourselves what is valuable. There are very few things that are inherently valuable. There are very few things that are goods in themselves. So we get to decide what we impart with this value and what is worth our time. And if that's programming for you, that's fine. If that's reading for someone else, that's fine. If that's knitting or quilting or whatever, that's fine. What's wonderful about a free society, what's wonderful about being in a place where we get to make decisions for our own lives is that we get to choose, and then we get to pursue the life that we want as much as possible. And hopefully with technology and with good governance, we can give everyone that opportunity instead of denying that opportunity to the poor, to the marginalized, to the ill, to the disabled, to people who don't get that opportunity to choose. How can we give everyone the chance to choose? How can we tend to everyone's needs? Technology can help us do that.
My guest has been Dr. Jack Russell Weinstein. He joins me each and every month here on Main Street for a segment we call Philosophical Currents. Jack's a distinguished professor of philosophy and ethics at the University of North Dakota. Always a pleasure, Jack.
Oh, it's always so much fun. Thanks.